So Friday morning, my wife and I decided that what we really wanted to do with a four-day weekend is we wanted to start cleaning out our attic because, you know, nothing screams he is risen like allergies. And so we spend the entire morning working on this. We're just cleaning out boxes, figuring out what we need to keep, what we need to get rid of, et cetera. And we realize it's lunchtime, and I look at her, and I'm like, I have no interest in going and putting anything together for lunch. Like, let's just go grab some food. So we go with our toddler, we get Chick-fil-A, right? And so he gets his kid's meal. It was on brand. It was Jesus' chicken. It's Easter weekend. It's great. And he gets his chicken nuggets. He opens his box, and instead of 5 nuggets, there's 6 nuggets. He's excited. He's thrilled. I'm like, buddy, it's Holy Week. Miracles are happening everywhere, all right? Just gonna just get used to this, because this is the weekend that we celebrate that miracles happen. This is the moment that we realize that miracles are possible even in today's world. Because they began with the greatest miracle from 2,000 years ago. That is what we celebrate on Easter weekend. And so what I want to do is I want to start with the story of the resurrection. I want to start with the story of Easter. Where in the Gospel of Luke, it says, on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. And in their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He's risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners and be crucified and on the third day be raised again. They remembered Jesus' words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 disciples and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them who had told this to the apostles, but they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. The very first Easter. It was the moment where what was thought to be impossible was shown to be possible. And it wasn't just that a man raised from the dead, which in and of itself was pretty spectacular, but it was this idea that hope could defeat fear. It was this idea that everything we thought we understood about this world could be reframed, all the way down to the very way in which Christ himself died, because he died on the cross, and the cross had been created to instill fear. The cross had been created to instill intimidation, to inflict pain, and then it became this symbol of healing, this symbol of hope, this symbol of miracle. And that is what's truly remarkable to me, because the image of the cross has become so intertwined throughout human history. It's become so intertwined throughout culture that I think now we're at a place where we've become so, accustomed to seeing it that we don't even truly recognize and appreciate it for what it is when it's in front of us. See, I think of like any great movie, any great book with the hero sacrifice, right? Like this is Harry Potter at the end of book 7. This is Tony Stark in Avengers, right? This is Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Any moment in which you have some character who lays down their life for the good of the world so that the world might be saved. This is one of those tropes that like we just know, we understand, we're honestly kind of tired of it. And the irony of that being that in human history, there had never been an example, real or fictional, of someone who would sacrifice themselves to save the entire world until Jesus. And so every time we see that, that is actually a callback to what happened on the cross. I think about the fact that hospitals, I think about the fact that like healthcare companies like have integrated the cross into all of their logos, into all the work that they're doing, such that like now we just see a red cross and we think that's synonymous with hospitals, and we forget the fact that like Christians in the church was the one who created hospitals in the first place. There was a reason why they chose the logo and the emblem of a cross through all of their work, because they were trying to show how healing was possible in this world in the same way that the cross did. I think about it even in the fact of when we look and we see the church and how the church isn't possible without the cross. And my favorite example of this, I brought a picture of it, and I'm going to prove it. This is from the movie Cars. This is the Popemobile. Everybody knows who that is, right? I love that, though, because that kind of implies that the Popemobile has been driven by the Popemobile, because he still has to be driven around. But the reason I love this is the implication of this picture, the implication of the Pope in the Cars universe, kind of means that there's like a Cars Roman Catholic Church. And if there's a Cars Roman Catholic Church, that means that there's like this apostolic line of popes all the way back to the car version of Peter. And if there was a car version of Peter, who was the first head of the church, that means there was a car version of Jesus, who was put to death for, and then, you know, rose from the graveyard or the, you know, junkyard 3 days later. And you know, he was put to death because he wanted to die for everybody's sins and transmissions. In order to have a car version of the Pope, you have to have the car version of the cross. The cross has become this image that is so important to who we are, and yet, as the world has gone on, we've actually seen people become less and less enamored with it. We've seen people become less and less moved by it. And we've seen Christianity begin to decline. And from what my money's worth, I believe that part of the reason that Christianity has been declining is not just because we've become so inundated with the cross, but because we've begun to explain the cross poorly. We've begun to explain the cross in terms of things like historical accuracy. And don't get me wrong, like, I can give you all the historical and factual reasons why we believe Jesus did in fact rise from the grave. But that's not the thing that necessarily moves people's hearts. We describe the cross in terms of our behavior, where we say, well, listen, if you just become devoted to Christ, do you understand what your life could become? And don't get me wrong, that's important, because our lives can, in fact, deeply become new and transformed when we begin to devote ourselves to the cross, when we begin to devote ourselves to Christ. But that's not the thing that's going to move people. That was more of the what, that was more of the how, but the thing that actually is going to transform hearts, it's going to transform lives, is truly understanding the why. The why of the cross. And the why was Good Friday. See, Good Friday is this day that we come together and we recognize and we acknowledge the fact that Christ got up on a cross and endured all this pain, endured all this suffering, and endured death. And the reason why that is so deeply important is it is universal for every single human that we are going to go through these moments of pain and suffering and darkness ourselves. For me, one of the worst moments of my life, it was about 12, 13 years ago or so, I had recently graduated college. I had this whole plan of what my life was going to do. I had this dream of what I was supposed to be doing, and I had been faithful to God, so I believed, like, you know, I was faithful to God, God's going to grant me all of these wishes, and nothing further from the truth could have happened. And I get into this place where all of a sudden I don't have the job that I'm supposed to have. I don't have the family that I'm supposed to have. And all of a sudden I'm now becoming hostile and angry towards everybody around me. I get to this place where I'm not even talking to my own father anymore, where I've pushed away my brothers, when my friends are reaching out to me and I'm ignoring them, and I'm just spiraling deeper and deeper. And at one point I even decide, okay, I'm just gonna move. I'm gonna move up to Dallas. That'll fix everything. And in fact, all it did was it made it that much easier for me to spiral deeper into depression and darkness and sadness. And I genuinely never thought my life could have gotten as low as it did in that moment, where I questioned why I was even living. But your stories have that same impact, because for some of you, it's the cancer diagnosis. For some of you, it was the job loss. For some of you, it was the divorce. For some of you, it was the fear that you weren't good enough, the fear that you were letting people down around you. What's been remarkable is the number of conversations I've had over the past couple months of people who found a home here at St. Andrew, where their story all seems to be the same, where they say they came from this place where they had these parents who weren't actually good parents for them, who did not deeply care for them, who did not inspire them and encourage them and support them, who did not raise them in such a way where they felt like they came from this love and this family, and seeing the ramifications of that, of carrying that baggage, carrying that burden all the way into adulthood and questioning, what does that mean for them? What does that mean for their family now? What does that mean for their relationship with Christ now? And seeing just how far that darkness can carry. And that's why the cross matters. Because I know two fundamental things, as true and as universal as it is that you and I and every single person we encounter in this world is going to have this moment where we feel like we are just trapped in pain and suffering and darkness and brokenness. We don't stay there. That no matter the worst of the possible moments that have occurred to us, we do not stay in that darkness. We eventually come out of it. And there's a lot of things that we attribute that to. We'll attribute that to, friends who pulled us out of it. We'll attribute to, you know, time heals all wounds. We attribute to so many things. But that actually leads to the second fundamental truth that I know, which is the fact that the one that actually helps us out of the darkness is Christ. Because the very reason why Christ went to the cross was so that we did not have to exist in the darkness for eternity. The very reason why Christ went to the cross is so that he could move into the darkness himself and he could carve a way out of it so that people, whether they realized it or not, were being led by him back into a moment of realizing that there was goodness in this world. This is why the cross matters. This is why it is so deeply important to us, because each and every one of us need that person who will lead us out of the darkness just as much as we need somebody who will sit with us in that pain and that suffering. Good Friday is that moment that we are reminded that we do not have to be afraid of the darkness, but Easter is that moment that we are reminded that the sun rises again and that the darkness doesn't win. The cross is synonymous with the sun rising once again and for us feeling safe and us feeling warm and us feeling loved. And this is my primary issue when I think about the fact that, like, as the world has gone on, one of the worst things that has happened is people begun to assume that the primary reason for Christ doing what he did was so that he could be loved and he could be adored. Because there's this perspective that of people who don't want to believe in Christ or don't want to follow Christ, where they go, well, listen, even if there's this hypothetical God who came and he sacrificed himself, etc., I don't want to worship a God who is so needy and is so desperate for love and attention that if I don't love him, he's going to punish me for all eternity. What kind of God is that, and why should I give my devotion to that God? And to that, I'm like, well, yeah, sure, that sounds fair. I don't want to worship that God either. But you have to understand that the fact that when Jesus was going through this story, he had multiple opportunities where he could have created a system where people were going to be required to be devoted to him. He had multiple instances where he was given the opportunity to take a throne, where he's had the opportunity to take authority and power in this world. And every single moment, he sidestepped it. And so why in the world after death would he also decide that now is the time for me to take this on, to force people into loving me? He didn't do it so that we would be forced and guilted into loving him. He did it so that we could know that it's possible to actually love again. He did it because this is the very promise that God had made at the beginning of the Bible, where God said, I'm going to redeem this world. He did it because the prophets foretold that this very thing would occur. Because in Isaiah 53, which we started reading on Good Friday, but we didn't quite get to the ending, because this is how the prophet Isaiah ends his passage on the suffering servant. He says, after he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. He bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. He will see the light of life, and he will be satisfied. There's this moment at the end of every great epic, at the end of every great adventure story, after every great action movie, where the hero kind of like looks out amongst all the people and sees their joy, sees their safety, and they smile to themselves because they go, man, it actually worked. And this is that moment for Christ, seeing the light and being satisfied by it. The best analogy, though, from our actual day-to-day living is imagining that moment as a parent when you watch your child walk across the stage and you realize that decades of work, decades of sacrifice, decades of giving unto yourself for somebody else was worth it. This is why Christ bore the cross. For this moment, because he knew that this moment was coming. He got up on that cross because he knew the sunrise was possible. He got up on that cross because he knew it was possible to have life and to have joy and to have fulfillment once again. He knew that this day was coming. And for that reason, he was going to be willing to do whatever it took in order to get through that darkness for each and every one of us. Because most importantly, he believed that it was possible to take that darkness and to reimagine it, to reframe it, and to restore it and redeem it. To take what we see as imperfection and for him to say, I can use that and I can make goodness from it. Which is a hard lesson for you and me to learn because we live in a day and a world where we think if something's not perfect, then it's a reflection on us and that we have to try to fix it. I learned this lesson, it was about 8-9 years ago. My then fiance, now wife, and I, we were in Germany for like a week and a half or so. Now, you will need to understand that when I say we were in Germany, we were chaperoning a group of World History AP students. And I'm going to need you to not be jealous because envy's a sin, okay? So, as part of being in Berlin with all these high school students, we got to see through this tour all the graffiti of Berlin. Because if you don't know this, Berlin is one of the graffiti-like hotbeds of the world. This is where artists come from all over the world to come to Germany to add their art to that mix. And so we go through this whole tour, we see all this cool art, and then they take us back to their workshop and they teach us how to make graffiti. And it was one of the coolest experiences ever, like just getting to like have these people teach you how to use spray paint and stuff. And so my wife and I, we got to make these really cool graffiti images. And I brought them because I wanted to show you just how amazing they are. Because these two images kind of reflect what it means to see the brokenness and the pain actually be made new. I think we have a picture. It'll come up here in a minute. But in that, what you need to understand is that I was going through our image, or I was going through the process of making the graffiti art that we were getting to make. And at one point, I had this mistake that happened. And as I had this mistake, I go back to the guy and I take him the stuff that I'm working on. I'm like, hey, can I have some new materials and stuff? Because I made a mistake. And he goes, you don't understand it yet. But that mistake is actually going to be really important. See, the two pieces that my wife and I made, she made Mahatma Gandhi and I made Tupac because she was a world geography teacher and I am ridiculous. So, but in this graffiti art of Tupac, there's some genuine mistakes in here that really bothered me at the time. But what this guy said is, listen, you have to understand that what you're dealing with is an imprecise art form, and you have to embrace the fact that there's going to be things here that aren't perfect for you. But now you get to use those to make a genuine masterpiece that's going to be so much more beautiful than you could have imagined it before. Christ did not get on the cross so that our brokenness, our past, our sin could be erased. He got onto the cross so that our brokenness, our past, our sin could be redeemed, could be used as a form of making us into perfection, into masterpieces, into glory. See, I think about all those kids who grew up into parents here at St. Andrew, and they're not sure actually how to be genuine, loving parents themselves. because they never had that image for them. But now I watch them as they're changing this narrative of everything they were raised in, and they become these examples of Christ's love and Christ's parenthood for their children themselves. And I realize that what God is doing is God is using the baggage that they brought with them and actually making them into greater parents than they could have ever been on their own. God is not erasing their past. He's not justifying their past. He's not saying, I made this so that you would become this person. But he said, listen, I sat with you in that brokenness, and now I'm going to move you from it. And you're going to carry it with you in such a way that it's going to be an example of your beauty. It's going to be an example of grace. It's going to be an example of the miracle. This is the lesson of Easter. This is what we are called to do. This is how we are called to live in this world. And the question for us today is, how are we going to honor that cross? How are we going to honor that sacrifice? Because there's two groups of people in this room right now. The first group is people who are sitting in that brokenness. We're sitting in that darkness. We're sitting in that sin and sadness, and we aren't sure how to find a way out. And I need you to know that the truth of Good Friday carries on to today as well, that Christ will sit with you in that pain because he took it on first. He knows what it's like. He knows how to sit with you and provide comfort for you until he is ready to walk with you through the pathway he made back into the sunrise. But for every one of the rest of us, I want you to know and I want you to understand that we now get an opportunity to honor that same sacrifice that Christ himself made. We get an opportunity to look into this world and to say, how do we prove Christ right? That when Christ got up on that cross and he said, I know what I'm doing, and in the end, all will be well. And at the end, when he looked out after that suffering and he was satisfied and he looked down on us and he said, that is all worth it. I would do it again because it was all worth it. We now get a chance to prove him right. We prove him right when we're the father who leaves work early to go home and to play Hot Wheels or Tea Party with our child, even though nobody ever did that for us. That's that moment that God looks down on us and says, could you look at that? It was worth it. We honor him every time a spouse goes and buys flowers or a card or some gift for their spouse that they've gone distant from. And Christ looks and says, look, they're going to find their way back to each other. Would you look at what they're doing? It was worth it. We find our way back to each other every moment that we come into worship on Sunday morning, and we all raise our voices to God and we have the opportunity to sing of his praise. And he looks down at us and he goes, they get it. They're seeing the light. They're basking in the sunrise. It was worth it. I would do it again for that. And in fact, in that, I'm going to invite you to stand, because here in a second, we're going to actually start worshiping again. But I want to encourage you, I want to inspire you that this week you find an opportunity to do something where Christ is going to look upon you and say, it was worth it, I would do it again. I want you to find somebody that is hungry that you can give food to, so that Christ goes, man, would you look at what they're doing? I would do it again. It was worth it. I want you to find an opportunity to sit with a coworker who's going through a difficult time, and to be there for them and to love them and sit with them in the darkness just as Christ did for you, so that Christ would go, I did do it again. It was worth it. We have an opportunity this week. We have an opportunity this year. We have an opportunity in our lives to not just find our way out of the darkness, but to show that our lives have been redeemed, that the darkness itself has been made into an object of perfection, that Christ will look at us and say, it was worth it. I would do it again. Would you look at what they're doing now? May this be the Easter that we go from this place and we prove that Christ was right.